Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 41 of Game On with Cody and John.
On this special episode of Game On, we'll talk about our foray into miniatures wargaming and give you a review of Privateer Press's War Machine Mark II.
Plus, we'll give you a bonus review of Z-Man Games' Longshot.
All of this and much more on Game On with Cody and John. Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all sorts of tabletop games, role-playing games, board games, card games, miniatures games.
And we're going to prove it.
Exactly. Coming to you from beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana, where spring has definitely sprung.
It's trying to break through.
And we're in convention season, just finished up Hoosier Con here in the great city of Indianapolis, and just feeling the gaming... the gaming flow, just flowing through,
the stuff,
just coursing through our veins, that gaming blood. And so we're ready to talk to you about something real special this episode, and it's a little bit of a departure from what we normally do. And Cody, what are we going to be talking about?
We're going to be talking about first kind of our adventure into miniatures wargaming. Neither John or I have, you know, we've played HeroScape and stuff like that, but we've never gotten into, you know, the buying the figure, painting the figure, assembling the figure, and playing with it, like, you know, the War Machine, Warhammer, those kind of games. So,
nor did we have any desire to.
No, we didn't really. Yeah, we were kind of, we don't want to do that. But we decided to kind of take a leap and try it out. And we're going to give you our impressions, because I bet there's a lot of you out there like that.
Exactly. And also, just to round out our show, we're not, you know, since we're sort of splitting up into a special segment and not doing our normal big deal and by Triad and I, we're also going to bring you a bonus review, and we'll just go ahead and tell you up front, of Longshot, which is a interesting horse racing game that just came out recently from Z-Man Games. So we've got horse racing, miniatures, John and Cody here in the springtime in Indianapolis. Could it really be any better?
What more could you possibly want?
Well, I want the game on Inbox.
Well, let's do it.
Now.
The Game On Inbox.
Send us an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Do it.
Well, it is the Game On Inbox, your best source of gaming news and information. But as always, we're going to start off with a little bit of love to our sponsor, Myriad Games. And Cody, why don't you give us a little bit of that love?
Well, since John and I are now Myriad MVP members,
yeah.
I'm waiting on our card and our polo shirt. And I don't know if there's a hat involved.
I would love a hat.
I know, big Pumbaa hat.
Nice.
But two of the things that I really want to talk about with Myriad Games is membership. Is the first is the flexible reservation system. Now, this comes with some of the MVP memberships, and it's been really useful for me because a little bit of spoilers, we're going to talk about miniatures gaming. I've kind of made my army list and revised it several times. And with Myriad Games, I've sent in my list as it's changed. And with flexible reservations, there's no penalty for taking items off of it or putting items onto it, even at a last minute notice, which is good for me because my army tastes kind of change on a whim, as it were.
Yeah. So that's a nice thing that you can, you know, you're not going to be penalized for that.
Yeah.
It's almost like having kind of a wish list that you can keep running.
Absolutely. And Dan and his staff, you know, like I've mentioned before, they're kind of like a gaming concierge. So, you know, very friendly, very professional, and said, absolutely, you know, we can get that on for you. Anything else you want to get? So it's nice.
It's nice. It's your friend of the gaming business.
And one other thing, we've mentioned the GameShare program before. And if you want to see what they have available in that, and basically, this is what is open to their in-store open play and to their game share program. You can go to myriadgames.com and check out their game library. And it's huge. It's constantly updated. And John and I have gotten some of the newest things from the game share program. So Dan is keeping it stocked over there in New Hampshire.
Yeah, and actually the game that we got, and we'll go ahead and tell you, we got the Through the Ages. Mm-hmm. It's a Civilization card game, and we may be talking about that in an upcoming episode. But the copy that we got was new in shrink wrap.
I mean,
you know, and so, you know, we'll be renting that one and possibly sending it back. But, you know, really, really nice quality stuff. So you're not going to get junk when you be a part of the game share program.
That's right. So check out Myriad Games at myriadgames.com. Shoot them an email, and they will take care of you and all your gaming needs.
All right, well, let's move on to games we've been playing. Cody, what have you been playing lately?
Okay, well, HoosierCon was the main buffet of games where I played. I played in two Dominion tournaments, winning one, and
which I came in second.
You came in second, but
by 4 points. It was very, very close.
Yep, and then played in another one on Sunday where I made the final table. I was the number one seed going in and got trounced by the other three people. They all bought Thieves and robbed me dry. I jumped out to an early lead, and they didn't like that, so they robbed me right there. It was sad.
Oh, that's kind of sad.
Yep. I ran my ex-president's Savage Worlds game.
Oh, yeah? How'd that go?
I thought it went really well. We had a couple listeners there. We had Chris Hahn, Geek of the Week, Chris Hahn. I don't know if you've seen on Board Game Geek.
I did not see that, no.
The standard's just going
just
straight
right
down.
Right into the toilet, yeah.
No, just kidding. Congrats, Chris.
Awesome.
And he played Ronald Reagan.
Oh, really? Yes, okay. So. And what was the main... Can you reveal, like, what was the premise of the story this time? What did the ex-presidents have to do?
Yeah, the ex-presidents, if I haven't mentioned it before, it's just kind of... It's loosely based on the old Saturday Night Live skit. It's basically all these old presidents that have special powers, and they go around, and they're a crime-fighting team. It's goofy, it's stupid, but it's fun. And in this one of the ex-president's members, Abraham Lincoln, had been kidnapped by John Wilkes Booth, who also had learned time travel and was going through. And
nice. Well, that's appropriate, because last year in your game, I played Abraham Lincoln, but I wasn't able to play this year, so...
That's right.
Who else was going to play Lincoln but me? Nobody.
That's right. No one. So basically, it was just them trying to track down Lincoln, and basically they ended up at Ford's Theater for the premiere of Our American Cousin 2, Second Cousin, where they had to save Lincoln from meeting the same fate again.
Wow.
So, like I said, goofy, but a lot of fun. And that's Chris awesome. Did a good job.
Very cool.
What else did I play? We got in Games of Long Shot. We played...
Yeah, you know, I ended up bringing... a big bag
we
of
played
games.
More from your bag of games than we did scheduled events, I think.
Yeah, and we were able to find a table for most of the stuff that we wanted to do, but we played everything from Time's Up Title Recall. We played a pretty big game of Battlestar Galactica with the expansion.
I was a Cylon again.
Again.
Adventurers.
I played the Adventurers. I played a game of Tobago with your family.
Yep.
And gosh,
Rune Wars. You taught some people.
I did teach a 4-player game of Rune Wars. Tried my best to go fast enough that we could get farther through the game, but we only made it through 1.5 years.
Yeah.
That's just a tough one when you're teaching the rules to that one. If you can get the rules down to that one and get 4 people around the table that know the rules, that game can really clip along. Yep. I still really, really like that
one. But in your defense, you had kind of an arbitrary time limit. You had to be out of a certain area because there wasn't a lot of open gaming space available just because there were so many attendees and so many events. So you did as well as you could.
It was strange playing the game on a checkered tablecloth and basically the hotel restaurant. Yeah. So it's like, oh, here's Rune Wars and the Land of Terranoth, and then there's this green and white check pattern next to it. I had a real good time at HoosierCon. I thought it was very well run. I thought it was pretty well organized.
Yeah.
RPGA seemed to have a big presence there.
They get the butts in the seats, as it were. I mean, they always fill up, and good
those
to them because that helps out. That helps keep the con free. So
yeah, exactly. And that's one of the coolest thing about HoosierCon is that it is free. You don't have to pay for any of those events. Plus, they even had like a little kind of a small dealer hall with some stuff, including our good friend Tom Tullis at Frat Dragon Games.
Yep.
Was selling his wares.
Yep. So. Got some stuff of his. I've been working on kind of a nice. We're finishing up the heroic tier in the D&D campaign, so I'm working on like the final kind of room, I guess, the final like set piece for it. So hoping to unleash that. And we played, this is not part of HoosierCon, but we tried out Summoner Wars.
We did, that's right. And this is a new game from Plaid Hat Games, where they were nice enough to provide us with a copy of that. We really appreciate that. And this game is a total hoot. It's great.
Yeah, we may do a more in-depth review down the line, but... Man, I just playing a few times, it is a lot of fun.
Yeah, and if you are familiar with Board Game Geek, if you go on there, it's getting a lot of good press, and I think our gaming guru Tom Vassell has given it a positive review. Which
video review, he was like on crack. I love this game.
But if he rubber stamps something, that's another 1,000 sales probably.
Yeah, probably.
But we'll rubber stamp it too that it's a really
for
good
five
game.
More sales
for five maybe three more sales. Yep. But it's a really good game. So even if we haven't reviewed it yet, we would say go ahead and get it. It's a good one.
Definitely.
Yeah. So let's see. What else? Also wanted to mention that when we were at HoosierCon, we ran into friend of the podcast, Alan Stucker.
That we did.
And two of his daughters. You know, last year we played Battlestar Galactica with his full brood of daughters. Yep. I brought two daughters this time, and you actually got to play a game with Alan, didn't you? Did you play?
Yeah, we played. I taught him Adventurers, and we played that, and that was fun.
Very cool. So Alan, was really good to see you, and ran into another couple of listeners as well, and just had a real good time. So we enjoy meeting all you guys that listen to the show, and gals.
All right, we've got a bit of email here in the Game On inbox, and John's going to hit you with some of them.
Yeah, well, we got a lot of good response about our previous episode, Those Who Can't Teach, about teaching rules. And we got this great email from Wade Kemper. He says, "Hey guys, listening to your latest podcast, Those Who Can't Teach, I was flooded with my own anecdotes involving teaching. So I'm always teaching games," he says. "I'm a teacher by trade, so it comes naturally to me, and I enjoy doing it. Most of the time." He said, I have a slight variant on the "if I had known that before" guy, who both of you said should be kicked out of a gaming group. I will call him the "oh, I see that you remember the rule when you benefit from it" guy.
It sounds like he should be kicked out already.
Exactly. This is worse than the "if I had known that before" guy, because he is accusing you of cheating. And so from that point on, if you win, it's tainted. I find this particularly obnoxious because this guy is the same one who never bothers to find new games, read anything about the game prior to playing, or even have any enthusiasm for the game. He simply shows up and complains. Not that it is completely apropos to this discussion, he says, but this guy also has played D&D for 25 plus years and does no background research, no character development, nothing, and still finds ways to complain and accuse me, the DM most of the time, of cheating in the same way he does with board games and miniatures games. Also, on an amazingly funny note, he pronounces coup de grace phonetically. Coup de grace.
Oh, no.
Not kidding. thanks, guys. So,
I've ran into those kind of people in my group before. Just, yeah.
So he also wanted to mention that he thought that the name Tanglefoot Bag for the RPG segment, he likes that better than GM Academy. He thinks that that was very, very clever.
It wins
in his book.
It is much more clever than GM Academy, but... But, sorry.
But you can't do Tanglefoot Bag and play that great music. You
know? That's right.
You know, that's probably what got it there. So thanks for that. We also got an email from Trent Howell, and he says, "Cody and John, I've enjoyed listening to your podcast, and your latest on teaching tips for introducing games was spot on." Spot on. Thank you.
With Cody and John.
Spot on with Cody and John. Thank you very much. He says, "In fact, just yesterday I was going through the rule book of a new game, and as I read, it was so clear that they put the cart before the horse. It dove so quickly into instructions in one specific area that I was scratching my head and saying, 'Who cares? First tell me the point of the game, then how to accomplish it, and then step back to the specific mechanics, etc.'" And you're exactly right. That's the way that it needs to be done.
Now, something to interject real quick is, John practices what he preaches, because at HoosierCon, you know, he was kind of put in the spot of teaching games, because I'm not going to do
it. The whole weekend.
I
had no voice at the end of the weekend.
Right. But he would stop himself as he began, and he's like, "Nope, the objective of the game," and you would have been proud of him, listeners. He did a bang-up job.
Thank you very much. So anyway, Trent continues and says, "We play a lot of games as a family, so when introducing games to the kids, it always helps to go over the objectives first and work back. And trying to keep things simple to start is key. Since we started doing our video reviews of games, where the kids do the reviews..." Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
"They've been working through how best to introduce and explain games. It's been a great experience for all of us, and we just posted our 31st review this week. Another great point was knowing the rules well in advance. The kids are usually anxious to play a new game, but if I haven't gone through the rules first, I always try to put the kids off because I know they won't sit patiently for me to read the rules right then. You know, they're chomping at the bit as soon as the lid is off." He says, "Thanks again for a good podcast to listen during my commute." And he says, "If you have a chance to look at our site and reviews, we'd love to hear what you think." And so you guys can check out Trent and his family's board game reviews at www.theboardgamefamily.com. So go check it out. All right, so that was a couple of the emails that we got in the inbox, but we want to devote a little bit more time to our contest that we started up this past episode and the implementation of our brand new communications technology, the Game On voicemail box. So, Cody, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we wanted you, the listener, or you, the listeners, to call in and suggest either a big deal topic or a game to review in By Try or Deny. We were originally going to pick our three favorites, and they were going to win a copy of Say Anything by North Star Games, but we decided that may not be the best way to do it. We're kind of Ameritrash fans by nature, so we decided instead of just picking out the three we liked the best, we're going to do it randomly.
Yeah, we don't want to penalize folks that are really into Euro games or war games, that if they, you know, suggest a game, and it might just not be something that we're going to get to the table, we still want to give you a chance to win the prize.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's not really your job to line up your interests with our interests. But as we played through these voicemails that we've gotten in the voicemail box, we'll give you our comments about these and which ones might end up on our list for reviews in the future. So we got a lot of really great response.
Yeah, we picked out some of our favorites here.
Yep. And so, by the way, you know, if you ever do want to get in touch with us via voicemail, you can always call the, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can call the Game On voicemail box at
4138. A game on.
That's right. That's 413-842-6366.
Operators are standing by.
That's right.
We got Flow.
Electronic operator is standing by there.
Now you want to talk to the boys?
All right. So let's just get right into these voicemails that we got. We're going to play a sampling of the best ones that we've got. And we, again, really do appreciate you calling in. So here's the first voicemail that we got.
Hey, Cody and John. My name is Daniel Davis. And I just listened to the news podcast. Nice one. A game I'd like to hear you guys talk about and review would be Ghost Stories. That's a game that we've been playing for the last couple months, and it's quickly becoming one of my favorite games, perhaps my most favorite. A word of warning, though, in light of the new topic, be wary of the rule book. It's not very good, it's not very well written, and it's laid out pretty poorly. So I would highly suggest you get the Headless Hollow, you know, the rule supplement that they make, because it's a lot better than the basic rule book. So anyhow, I love the podcast, and I look forward to winning that copy of Say Anything. All right, take it easy. Bye-bye.
All right, so thank you, Daniel.
Thanks, Dan.
So he suggested Ghost Stories.
Mm-hmm. Which we've played.
We have actually played that. Uh-huh. I used to own it. I actually don't own it anymore.
Oh, no.
And you may remember, if you listen back to our obligatory holiday episode, that game was a chosen game by both of us in a very specific category. Cody, do you remember what category it was?
I believe it was game to give to your most hated enemy.
That's right. Game to give your enemy. So that's, you know, it's a cooperative game.
I want to see how you turn out of that. Well, what it is.
Well, it's a cooperative game. And I think for us, the reason why we wanted to give it to our enemy was because it's just really difficult.
You will not win.
And it's just so difficult to win. I think a lot of people would find a lot of great challenge in that. Unfortunately, it's unlikely that we'll do a full review on that one, just because it's so difficult to get that to the table based upon Jones Theory rules.
Yeah.
And here at Game On with Cody and John, regardless of what I think, Cody's in charge of what we play.
Because
if Cody ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
That's right. I like the way you think, Richard. Well done.
So anyway, I will not deny that Ghost Stories is a very well put together game. But as far as cooperative games go, there's some that we like a little bit better. But I'm glad you're enjoying playing it, Daniel.
We kind of started that on the downer.
Yeah, okay. Well,
tell
sorry.
Us what you want to play. Yeah, we're not playing. Next.
Oh, well, you know, we're going to give you
say what we want. Well,
watch that microphone there, pal.
I'm getting rowdy.
You were going to say what we want, play what we want.
That's right.
Yeah. So, you know. But,
before I assaulted the microphone.
But, Daniel, we do appreciate your entry, and you will be number one. Okay? Entry number one.
Number one.
Okay. All right. Here's the next one.
Hey, guys. I'm calling. My name is Ben Carell, and I'm from Bloomington, Indiana, just a little south of you guys. And, I was listening to the episode 40 and wanted to say I'd love to hear about Stronghold, but if you guys have already covered that one, I don't know for sure if you have. I would like you to talk about maybe an oldie but a goodie, but Cuba and its expansion, if you've got Cuba around. Thanks so much. Bye.
All right, thanks, Ben. And before we start, go Hoosiers. Okay. Bloomington, Indiana Hoosiers.
Woo! How are they doing the NCAA tournament this year?
I'm not here to talk about the past.
okay. So he wanted us to play Stronghold. Now, this is actually a game that I've wanted to get for a long time. Kind of a new release, I think, at Essen this past year. Unfortunately, it's really... if there is an English version, I don't know about it. And the non-English version is really difficult to get.
Hmm.
But this is one that I think that we would really enjoy playing. It's, you know, you sort of have a castle stronghold and you're trying to defend it.
That's cool.
So as soon as there's an English version of this that's readily available, I think this is going to be one that we're going to probably take a close look at.
Yeah.
So, and Cuba with all the expansions, I don't know that one, that game specifically. And I think that is in the kind of the Euro realm, right?
Yeah, my history with Caribbean island nation games is not very good.
But what about communist Caribbean Island Nation games?
That may be better.
It might be a little bit better. Know. Yeah, there's cigars involved. There may be. I don't know. So we may have to check out Cuba as well. So, you know, and going back to our Myriad Games membership, a lot of these games that are going to be coming up as we do these voicemails, you know, we might be able to get those with our game share. So even if it's something we don't want to buy right away, we can definitely check it out by, you know, renting it.
And, you know, if we get either one of those games, we should call him up and have him play with us. He's down in Bloomington, heck.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So Ben, thanks so much. And you are going to be entry number two.
Two.
All right, here's the next one.
Hey, Game On. This is AJ from Essex, Vermont. And I would most like to see you guys play Agricola. I'd really like to see what you think of the game that's been called the Gamer's Game of All Games. And I'd like to see what you guys think of it. Okay, thanks, guys. I love the show. And thanks for reviewing all those great games. I'll listen to you later.
All right, well, thank you, AJ, from Vermont.
The Green Mountain State.
Do you have, like, an encyclopedia in your head of all the different you know, names? The Granite State, Green Mountain State.
I know most of them, mainly because, like, Dan Rather, when he'd do his election returns, he'd always be like, Indiana, 16 votes from the Hoosier State, go to... So anyway, AJ's thing.
Yeah, AJ, thanks. So AJ wants us to play Agricola.
Yep.
Cody, what do you think about that?
Dog.
Pitchy, yeah, it's pitchy.
It's pitchy. No, I can see why people would like it. It's a very elegant game. I think it's very tightly designed, and it's got a lot going for it. It bores me to tears, and I don't. I guess it would be like the Eurogamer's game. I don't know. For me, it doesn't scratch any itch for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's another game that I used to own but don't own, and it's just not one that gets to the table very often. You know, Cody and I were talking about this earlier this week, that it seems like there sometimes is a delineation between what's a great game and what's a fun game. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the great games should be the fun games, but there's a lot of games, and I think Agricola is in that category, that you look at the way it's designed and the way that Uwe Rosenberg put all this stuff together, and it's elegantly done. It's a great game.
Yeah, I mean, Puerto Rico is a great game.
Puerto Rico is a great game too, but you know, the fun element, just based upon our likes and dislikes, you know, it doesn't really have that fun element for us. So I'm not sure if that one's going to get it.
We're just shooting them down.
I know. Well, mainly because now, like Ghost Stories, I don't even own a copy of it anymore. Yeah. But you know, you never know. Maybe Cody will take a few weeks off, and I'll just decide to go and I'll take over the podcast, and we'll do Agricola. So anyway, thanks very much for your.
I like how it's my fault. You gave it away.
No, it's not your fault, but. But we've talked before about how my palate for gaming taste is much, much wider than yours.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but I'm just saying. So, all right. So, AJ, thank you so much. And you are going to be entry number three. All right. Here's the next one.
Hey, Cody. Hey, John. My name's Tim, calling from Canada, Victoria, BC. Longtime listener, first time caller. I think you should talk about a game called The Princess of Machu Picchu. A game that I think is really exceptional. Really enjoy it, and Tom Basil seems to hate it. So I'm kind of curious what you guys think about it. We work on the show, and I look forward to hearing more. Take care.
All right. Well, thanks, Tim from Canada,
the Dominion of Canada.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, and he said he was a long time listener. He's a LTL FTC, long time listener, first time. And thanks for your call. And he wants us to play The Princess of Machu Picchu.
Okay.
Which I don't know much about. I've heard actually some pretty good things about the game, but honestly, even if I don't know a whole lot about the game, the fact that the Tom Vassell hates it. Game on. I mean, let's play it.
It's kind of funny. We poke fun at Tom so much, but at least with me, our gaming tastes seem to really go along the same
line
path.
Up pretty well. Yeah.
So I'm willing to give it a shot, so I'll play it in game one. So yeah, we'll what is it?
The Princess of Machu Picchu.
Oh, that sounds exciting.
It's is that a mountain in Peru or something like that? So
Machu Picchu. Oh, it's not like literal Sons of Kings of Machu Picchu?
Well, but Machu Picchu, isn't that like a mountain in Peru or something?
Yeah, I think, but who are the princes of said Machu Picchu?
I don't know.
That's why we got to
Fred the Prince. I don't know. So we'll go. Well, yeah, we got to do some research now.
What, the curtains?
No, not the curtains. So we'll check on that one. And thank you so much for your call, Tim.
He's number four.
Number four. All right, here is the next call.
Hi, Cody and John. This is Adam from Des Moines, Iowa. And I just recently started listening to your podcast after the first of the year, and I've gone back and listened to a couple of your episodes and checked out other gaming podcasts based on your suggestions, like Dice Tower. And I haven't really heard anyone talk about a game series that I really love, and I would love to hear either what you guys think of the series or your rants on it, is Munchkins by Steve Jackson Games. Munchkins has spawned numerous expansions and different themes, and I personally, it's what got me into playing card games, and I just, every time I get together with a group of my friends, we're having fun backstabbing each other, and we recently played the Munchkin board game, which I think is a nice transition into these games I'm hearing about from now. So I would love to hear what the gaming world podcasting professionals that you are think of Munchkins by Steve Jackson Games. Is it just a joke that college kids play, or is it something for serious gamers to look into? All right. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Adam from Des Moines, the Hawkeye State.
Go Hawkeyes.
Well, Iowa. Des Moines is a city.
River City. River City, Iowa.
He talks about Munchkin, a game both of us have played.
Oh, yes.
I played quite a bit with my gaming group.
Yep. We'll go ahead and just save you a little bit of time on this one, Adam, and give you our little 2.5 minute talk about Munchkin.
Yeah.
So, Cody, what do you think of Munchkin?
Munchkin gets a lot of hate, and I do think that it the jokes kind of wear off after a while. But if you stick to one, I guess one genre, I mean, I've played with groups where you mix regular Munchkin and Star Munchkin and Munchkin Foo. If you do that, I think it gets really bloated and kind of...
Doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. But if you just stick to one of them, it's not too bad, you know, if everyone is in kind of a fun screw your neighbor mode. I would actually suggest my group kind of upgrade. I say upgraded. We moved to Cutthroat Caverns, which I think has that Munchkin feel, but it is a step further in the... I don't know, air quote gamer type of games.
Yeah.
But Munchkin's not that bad.
No, I mean, it's one of those games where it's all about the humor. It's all about the jokes. I mean, if it's and for those of you who've never heard of the game before, it's basically a card game that makes fun of role-playing games and sort of the role-playing game culture and that sort of a thing. So the cards are funny. If you've ever played Dungeons & Dragons, the cards are definitely funny. But it's one of those things where the more you play it, the less funny the cards are. And if you're bringing new people in, then it's fun to watch them discover the cards for the first time and laugh at them and everything. I find this game is really good to play in like a convention environment where you're with a whole bunch of people that you've never met before, but you have that common ground, you know, because you're getting acquainted with them anyway. And if you can use this game as a way to, you know, share your love of role-playing games, and that's one thing. You know, it's, like Adam mentions in his voicemail, it spawned multiple different iterations.
To the point of excess.
Yeah, Munchkin Cthulhu, Munchkin Booty, which I believe is pirate-themed. And so, you know, Steve Jackson squeezing as much blood out of that turnip as he can. But you know, for what it is, I think it's not a bad game. I would actually really like to check out Munchkin Quest, which is the Munchkin board game he was talking about.
Yeah, I tried it.
I've never checked that one out before. I saw when it was in like prototype form. They were playing it at Origins 1 year, but yeah, I'd like to maybe check that one out. So we'll put that one on the list too. But you asked, is it just a game that college kids play, or is there a place for serious gamers? I don't think there's a place for it as far as, you know, what are we going to sit down and play tonight? Let's play Munchkin. I don't think many serious gamers are going to be interested in doing that, but it's a good filler, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, you agree?
I agree. Do you concur?
I do concur. All right. Well, thank you, Adam, for your call, and you are going to be number
five.
Number five. All right. Let's move on to the next one.
Hey, John and Cody. Love the show. Just wanted to phone in to the competition and say after the previous show's big deal about the Event Horizon, I think you should try the World in Flames game, because that's an event game to end all event games. Cheers. My name's James, by the way, from the Netherlands. Cheers.
All right, an overseas caller from
the Dutch.
James from the Netherlands. Yeah, you know, it's the only European country I've ever been to.
Really?
Yeah, we went on a missions trip there about 5 years ago. We toured the Netherlands. We went to like four or five different cities and did like some concerts and everything. So
that'd be cool.
Beautiful country. So anyway, so he is interested in us playing World in Flames. Now, Cody, you probably don't know much about World in Flames.
I had heard nothing about it.
All right, well, I did a little research on BoardGameGeek and found that World in Flames, if you look it up on BoardGameGeek under playing time, it's listed as 6,000 minutes.
So 10 hours,
Ten hours, roughly. Whew. Yeah. He says the event game to end all event games.
Yeah, that's a sleepover game.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a pretty a big boy britches war game there.
Yeah.
Boy, I don't know.
If we're ever in Holland, we'll...
Yeah, you know, that's right. If we ever find ourselves in Holland, then James will call you up and maybe we can play that over a weekend. But otherwise, I'm not sure if that one's going to make it to the table.
I almost got to try it now at some point. 6,000 minutes?
Okay, you go find some folks to play. I'm all about big games too, but I'm just not sure if I can stand over a map of, you know, Europe for that long or whatever. So, all right. Well, so there's number, was that number six or
number
seven?
Six.
Number six. Thank you for keeping track.
No problem.
All right. So James, you're number six and we'll move on to the next one.
Hey, Cody and John. This is Justin calling from Pennsylvania. I'm just calling because I heard your most recent episode. I really love the podcast. I've got a suggestion for that contest you guys are running. One of the things I like about Game On is that you guys cover a real broad range of games, miniature gaming, CCGs, role-playing. But one of the things that doesn't usually make it onto your schedule is war games. I've always been curious about why. I know a lot of gamers find war games off-putting, but I like them. So I was wondering if you might want to dedicate both the Big Deal and the Buy, Try, or Deny segment to talking about war games. Are there things about the game, you know, war games that you don't like? Are there things that you find would be off-putting for other gamers? Just something to keep in mind. And as for suggestions of particular games that you could review, I've got a couple. I suggest, though, an actual old-school Hex Encounter game, something like the Russian campaign of Avalon Hill, which is from decades ago. Or you could try out some of the newer war games from GMT, Combat Commander Europe or something like that. They tend to be a little quicker and lighter. And certainly less complex than Twilight Imperium, which you guys did a while back. Just a thought. I hope it's helpful, and I really like the podcast. Keep up the good work. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Justin from Pennsylvania, the Keystone State.
Oh, my gosh. You got to get a hold of your life.
Thank you. Talking about war games, and, you know, I think we need to resolve... We're going to try one.
Yeah.
Not World in Flames.
We are not. We've actually gotten several emails of people saying, why don't you play war games? Why do you hate war? Yeah, it's mainly more, why do you hate war games? And the truth is, we don't. We don't hate them at all. It's just the group of people that we're around that play. I mean, that really is where a lot of our opportunities to play come from, is either stuff that that Cody and I are playing together or that we're playing in our groups. And, you know, we kind of have the geeky fantasy role play game kind of a group of folks, you know, that like the Ameritrashy games and everything. So, you know, that's why you'll find we don't focus too much on Euro games, because we just don't play them as much as we do the other kinds of games.
And they're not very fun.
I knew that was coming. But also, we just don't have anybody, I think, that is a
hardcore
war gamer.
We just don't have the access to it.
Yeah. But it's a good point. We're not opposed to them at all. And even some of the lighter crossover games like Memoir 44, I mean, we both really enjoy that game.
Yeah.
So a game like Combat Commander Europe, which I've heard lots of good things about, you know, I think we should definitely resolve to try to play that or something of that ilk, you know.
Done and done.
So, you know, we want to broaden our horizons. We're about to talk in our big deal about getting into miniatures wargaming, which is a whole different direction. So we are not biased in that respect. We're willing to try anything. So we'll check out one of those war games. And
entry number seven.
Thank you. Thank you. Entry number seven.
I got one job.
You're doing very, very good. Good
thank
at
you.
It. All right. On to entry number eight.
Hey, this is Jay from Charlotte, North Carolina, and what I'd like you guys to cover is Warhammer 40K, one of my favorite games of all time. Been into it forever, and, you know, John, I know you're starting to get into it, or I always get confused. It's either John or Cody. One of you two is into 40K, or at least started to, and then you guys kind of got in the war machine, but I think you both need to get into 40K. Again, Jay, Charlotte, North Carolina. Later.
All right, thank you, Jay, from North Carolina. The
Tar Heel State?
Well, that's where the Tar Heels are. Yeah, probably so.
Yeah, we'll go with it.
The First in Flight. I know that their license plate say First in
that's
Flight.
That's right.
So he wants us to talk about Warhammer 40K,
uh-huh.
which, and whether it's you or me or
it's you.
Me or Hugh that's getting into it, I mean, who knows? We're almost like one person, really. Only not. Yeah, I actually just recently got the Assault on Black Reach starter set. And because we've been doing War Machine, I've been getting more into painting, those kind of things. But as soon as I get all of the stuff assembled for 40K, we're definitely going to sit down and play that. If nothing else, it's just a comparison to War Machine, see, you know, compare and contrast. So I think you will find us talking about that game, at least on a cursory level, you know, in an upcoming episode, just, you know, as we're continuing on this wargaming kick here. So,
yeah.
The miniatures wargaming. So yeah, a good suggestion there. And, you know, that's, you want to talk about, a whole different direction of hobbying. That's Warhammer there.
Yep.
So, all right. Thank you very much, Jay. So your entry number?
Eight.
Eight. Okay. On to number nine.
Hey, it's Michael Denman, Trump on Board Game Geek. And I'd suggest Stronghold would be a good game for y'all to do a buy, try, and die on. That's a good mixture of something close to Euro Trash, but maybe Ameritrash, what am I saying? Or maybe a Euro game. I don't know which way y'all feel on that, so I'd be interested to hear about. Thanks.
All right, that was from Michael from Parts Unknown.
From Parts Unknown. Another vote for Stronghold.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's...
I hadn't even heard of this game.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty cool. So, yeah, like I said, as soon as we can get a copy of that in our hot little hands, we will definitely give you a review of that one. So,
and you are number nine.
Number nine. Okay, and so here's our last call, and this is going to be a big number 10, and then after that we will... do the die roll for our drawing for the copies of Say Anything. So here's number 10.
Hi, this is Cliff Churgin calling from Jerusalem, and the game I would like to see you review next is something that I've been debating whether or not to purchase. It's called Arcane Legions. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Cliff. Cliff's calling all the way from Jerusalem.
The Holy Land.
Very good, very good.
State.
And, yeah, and his... His suggestion was for us to review Arcane Legions. Well, you know what, Cliff? We actually already have reviewed Arcane Legions. We did a full buy, try, or deny review of Arcane Legions in episode 29 of Game On with Cody and John, entitled This One Goes to 11.
The Game On Time Machine working out there.
That's right. So
there was actually a lot of people playing Arcane Legions at HoosierCon.
It was surprising, yeah.
It was pretty
cool.
They had the full painted armies and big Sphinx.
Yeah,
Sphinx eyes.
I bought quite a bit of stuff at Gen Con, and I put it all together, and we played a couple of games of it, but... That's the kind of game where if you either don't have someone else that really, really loves it and wants to collect it too, then you really need to have a game store or a local group that's going to, you know, feed that, that fire, I guess.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. I was surprised to see so many people playing it. It is a really good game. So check out episode 29, Cliff, you are still entry number 10. So 10 big entries to the contest here, and three of you are going to win a copy of Say Anything.
This is exciting.
From North Star Games, a great party game there. So thank you so much for all of you who called in to the show, and I think this voicemail thing is working out great.
Yeah, keep calling if you just want to ask questions or anything. Send it our way.
Yeah.
We love getting the calls.
And you know, in the inbox, we always will read emails and things like that. Well, we'll play the voicemails too, and that's just a great way to interact with you guys. So thanks so much for that. So without further ado, we have 10 entries, and then we have our 10-sided die here. So we'll do three rolls, and you know, the first three unique numbers that come up will be our winners.
All right. Here's the first one.
All right.
Drum roll.
Number three is... AJ from Vermont.
Hey, the Green Mountain State.
Congratulations, AJ. You won a copy of Say Anything.
Well done. Number two.
The second winner.
Is number 10.
Number 10. Okay, so Cliff Churgin from all the way in Jerusalem. So
big winner.
Wow, that's a big winner there. So, okay, so I got to figure out what shipping costs are to Jerusalem.
We'll work something out.
We'll get it there to you.
Yep.
So congratulations on that.
And
our third winner... Oh, we got another number three.
He's lucky. It's number one.
Number one. Okay, number one is Daniel Davis calling. Did he say where he called from? I don't think so. Well, congratulations to AJ and Daniel and Cliff for winning copies of Say Anything. The three of you guys, we'd invite you to please Well, I guess you could call us at the Game On voicemail box, but it probably would be easier if you could email the Game On inbox.
That's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Yep, and give us your mailing address, and we'll get that copy of Say Anything out in the mail to you. So
pronto.
Congratulations. Pronto. Thanks so much for all of you who called in, and we've got some real good ideas for stuff that we want to do coming up on the show. So
I think we're going to close out the inbox.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We kind of broke the ground on the voicemail thing. We want those coming in, and we've got a nice special segment coming up, so we should get into that.
All right, I say we do it. Oh, but wait. Before we do any of that, I think it's time for yet another...
It's time for a Game On bonus review. Bonus review. Bonus review. Bonus review.
Oh, we weren't going to let you off the hook that easy. We have a bonus review of... probably one of the best horse racing games I've ever played. Well,
how many horse racing games have you played?
The only horse racing game I've played, and it is Long Shot by Z-Man Games. And here to give you the call to the post on the rules is John.
All right. Long Shot is a game for 3 to 8 players, which is a great range of players, I think. You can play in a lot of different settings with that number of players. So 3 to 8 players, it takes about 45 minutes to an hour to play. It seems like it is kind of dependent on how many players that you have. And retails for about $50, and it's from Z-Man Games, designed by Chris Handy. And Chris Handy actually has designed a couple of games, but another thing that he's known for is he's the founder and chief guy at GatePlay.com, which is an online game store. So it's interesting he's also a game designer there. So Long Shot is a horse racing game. It's a very simple idea of going to the track and betting on a horse. And so you're going to have 10 horses in this game. The board itself is, you know what, Cody? I've been doing this. I'm not teaching the rules the John Richard way.
Tisk, tisk.
The point of this game is to win. And the way that you win is by having the most money. And the way that you get money is by betting on horses that are in this horse race. You can purchase horses, or you don't even have to buy them. You can just bet on horses, even if they belong to somebody else. And based upon how well you bet and how well the horses do, you're going to get paid out a certain amount of money at the end of the game. Then whoever has the most money is the winner.
Well done.
Thank you. All right, so you have this board that looks like a horse track, like a one-lap horse or racetrack. And there are 10 lanes. You're going to have 10 horses. The game comes with these 10 little plastic horses. And you have to take these colored stickers and put them onto the horses, and that has the numbers on them. And you get 2 sets of these stickers, which is a cautionary tale. Whenever you have a second set of any kind of stickers, then they're assuming that the first set is not going to stay on there. And I have found that when you pull out the horses out subsequent times, you usually have to kind of press on their backs to get the stickers to stay on there. But, you know, it probably was the best they could do without increasing the cost by having to actually, you know, etch the horse number on the side. So they're in two or three different colors. And so you'll line them up on the starting line. Each horse has a card that goes along with it, and the horses have very comical names like Slow Gin and 9 Lives.
Six Gun,
yeah. And so those will sit next to the board. And then everybody is going to get $25. The game does deal in paper money. We'd probably recommend that you switch to poker chips.
I would highly recommend poker chips. Might allow
things to go a little bit faster, but so that you do get paper money. You get $25 in that. You're also going to get a re-roll token, which I'll talk about in a second. And then you're going to get some cards. There's one giant long shot deck in the game, and it's this deck of cards that allow you to sort of break rules and cause interesting things to happen on your turn. So you're going to start off and get 4 of those cards, and then pretty much you're ready to go. There are 2 dice that come with the game, and those are what control the movement of the horse. On your turn, you're going to do 4 things. The first thing that you're going to do is you're going to roll both of those dice. One of the dice is a 10-sided die that has a color and number on it that corresponds with the horse that's on the board. And then the other die is a 6-sided die that has either a 0, a 1, or a 3 on it. I think there's like 1, 3, 1, 0, and 4 ones or something like that. There's more ones than just anything else. And you're going to roll both of those dice, and then you're going to move that particular horse that number of spaces forward. After you've moved the horse, then you're going to be able to take an action. There's 4 things that you can do for your actions. One thing you can do is you can discard 2 of your long shot cards and get $5 from the bank. And the whole point is to get money so you can bet. So sometimes if you don't have cards, if you have cards in your hand that you don't really care about, you can discard two, get $5. You can also buy an unowned horse. Any of the horses, the cards that are on the side of the board, if they haven't been claimed yet, you can purchase one of those. The purchase price of the horse is right there on the card, and you can take that and put it right in front of you. Each of the horses is going to have a particular number of odds to them, based upon, you know, whether they're considered more of a long shot or a sure thing. And so at the bottom, it's going to show you how that horse is going to pay out, you know, odds like 9-1, 5-1, 7-1, things like that, whether the horse comes in win, place, or show, first, second, or third. So you want to choose your horse carefully based upon that. And then you're also going to see that based upon how good the horse's chances are, you're going to have at the bottom of the horse card a set of numbers that are going to be either highlighted or not highlighted. And what this means is that on your turn, when you roll those dice, let's say you roll and you get horse number 10 moves one space. If but you're going to also look, so you moved horse number 10 one space, but you're going to look at the bottom of your horse's card, the one that you own. And if the 10 is highlighted and you've rolled a 10, then your horse, the one that you own, is also going to move forward one space. So that's an incentive for moving, for buying a horse, is that you might be able to get your horse to move a little bit faster because you own it, based upon your die roll. The longer, more of a long shot the horse is, the fewer numbers they're going to be that are highlighted. And that'll also, usually those horses are the least expensive too. The more expensive the horse, the more numbers are going to be highlighted, the more chances that it's going to move. Now this extra move, it only happens on your turn. So you can buy an unowned horse. You can place a $5 bet on any horse, whether you own it or not. And there is a maximum bid of $5 each turn. Now you can stack those bids. So if you bid $5 each turn, you just continue to stack the money up for that horse, but only $5 each turn. And if you bet on your own horse, then you'll just take your $5 and slide it underneath that card. And if you don't own the horse, there are tokens for each of the horses. You'll get one of those tokens and you'll put that on top of your money. So you can bet on a horse. The fourth thing that you can do is you can play a long shot card. And these long shot cards do various things. They can allow you to move horses, get money, you know, there's lots of variants, and that's kind of the variety and flavor in this game, are the things that you can do with the long shot cards. So those are a lot of fun. Some of those long shot cards can actually also be played on other people's turns too, depending on what numbers are rolled and that kind of stuff that might give you money and abilities. So those are the four things that you can do. Play a long shot card, buy an unowned horse, bet $5 on any horse, or discard two cards to get $5. Once you've done that, the last thing you're going to do on your turn is to draw a card. As near as I can tell, I don't think there's a hand limit in this game, so you'll probably end up with quite a few cards in your hand after a few rounds. And then you're going to pass the dice to the player, next player clockwise, and then that's the end of your turn. So this is just going to continue until three horses have crossed the finish line. And those horses will be ranked, you know, win, place, show, first, second, third. And then at the end of the game, you're going to pay out the people who have bet on those horses that won. And then you're also going to pay the people who own the horses. The number one horse is going to end up with $100. The number two horse gets $75, and the number three horse gets $50 to the owner of that horse. That's in addition to any betting money that was bet on that horse by the owner. So you get to the end of that, and then whoever has the most money is the winner. Now, there's two other things to keep in mind. One is that you have a reroll token, which will allow you once per game to reroll one of your dice, either the horse die or the movement die. So that can be useful if you're trying to either move a horse back that you don't want to win or move your horse forward. The other thing is that on the board, the final quarter of the board is colored a little bit darker, and it says no bets. And so after a horse has crossed into that last quarter of the race, it's not, you can't place any more bets on that horse. Now, there are cards that will allow horses to move backwards, and if a horse was in the no bets area but then gets moved back into the no bets area, you can still place bets on it. So there's a little bit of strategy involved. A lot of it is just sort of random fun, and it's very, very themey as far as just being able to roll the dice. And I mean, you know, the games that we played had have had people pretending to be horse announcers. Down the stretch they come.
Yeah. You can't not do it. I mean, it's just hard to resist.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Although it is kind of weird, you know, since it's simulating a horse race, that horses are lurching forward and backward.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he goes back three spaces. Oh, he goes forward.
I guess if we were watching it in like real time, it would be really fast. You know?
Yeah.
It would be funny to do like time lapse photography on a game of Long Shot. So that is the basics of Long Shot. It's a real light game, can play with up to 8 players. And Cody, what were your thoughts on the game?
I really liked it. I pretty much thought I would when John first cracked it out. But the fact that it has such a nice player range, 3 to 8, and I think it would play just fine from 3 to 8. I think it would work really great. It's fun, light game with the betting involved. And there's more strategy than you would think, you know. It's like, do you go with the strategy of just owning a lot of horses? Do you just maybe own one, spread your bets around? There's a lot of ways to approach it. And at the end of the day, it was just a lot of fun. And, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's got all the same, the feel of going out to the track and, you know, putting your money on the old paint in the back, you know, mm-hmm. and hoping that it makes it. And especially when things start to get towards the end there, horses will just kind of surge forward, you know, that you weren't expecting were going to be in the running. And you're trying to find cards that are going to cause those horses to stop. And I found there was a lot of excitement to it. And with like a 5 or 6 player game, with the right crowd especially, it is a real hoot. So, yeah. You know... I guess rather than go through buy, try, and deny points like we normally would do, I would just give this game an overall buy rating. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's that good of a game that I think that it's very accessible. You know, even non-gamers know about horse racing, and I think in general like betting games.
Yeah.
So I think you can play this just about anywhere.
I agree. It's Jones Theory compliant. It fills a nice niche in your collection, and like John said, just a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah, so that's Long Shot, a little special bonus review from Game On with Cody and John this time, and we both give it kind of a buy, and kind of a buy. we both give it a buy, and we say go and pick it up. So, all right, there's your bonus review. Nice and quick, and now we'll move on to, what were we talking about this show?
War Machine.
Ah, yes. The Big Deal.
As far as deals go, this one's pretty big. It's time for our kind of hybrid big deal, buy or try or deny, big deal special, or deny.
Super spectacular.
On a very special game. On.
Yes.
We're going to be not only giving you a review on War Machine Mark II, but telling you how John and I went from just your standard kind of board game, RPG-er, into that section of the game store which you usually avoid, the miniatures wargaming side. So we're going to tell you just how we got involved and maybe tips if you want to put your toe in the water. We'll tell you how.
That's right, and we're all about broadening our horizons here, but mm-hmm. this is an area of gaming that I have railed against for a long time because of the whole painting and assembling hobby thing that goes along with it. So, you know, as a board gamer primarily in some RPGs, you know, I just looked at those kind of games and said, that will consume my life. I have no interest in doing that whatsoever. So this is a surprise. The fact that we're doing this episode is a surprise to me.
I never would have thought we would.
No. But, you know, the nice thing is that when you listen to podcasts, a lot of times it really can open your mind up to things. And so I got to give credit to the D6 Generation podcast. If I hadn't started listening to that show about probably a year ago, I wouldn't have even given it a second thought, really. But these guys did a great job of making this kind of a game more accessible. And these are guys that also do RPGs and board games and that kind of stuff. And they seem pretty normal. And so they started talking about this game, and, you know, I had been in game stores before seeing people play War Machine. And the thing that scared me about those, other than the painted figures, was the tape measure.
Yeah.
Like, gotta use a tape measure in this game. You know, where's the board with
the hexes and the squares.
So let me just back up and just talk about the kind of miniatures games that I've played in the past. You know, the very first miniatures game that I've ever played was Heroescape. And it was one of those things that I saw it in Walmart, and well, Walmart of all places. Mm-hmm. And I picked it up, and it just was, it's just a ton of fun. You know, we've talked about HeroScape a lot on the show before. And I love the fact there were these cool miniatures, like little, playing with little toy soldiers and stuff. And you get to, you know, play this cool little tight rule set and neat game. And everybody that I knew that was involved in miniatures gaming kind of thumbed their nose at HeroScape and say, oh, it's so simplistic. You know, and you know, Cody and I are like, well, it's fun.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's simplistic. And the thing I liked about it is you had these nice pre-painted miniatures, and I didn't have to paint anything, and you know, it wasn't collectible,
right?
Which was a good thing. But the next step, and as a game that Cody and I played for a while, was D&D miniatures.
Yeah.
And what were some differences about that game?
Well, if you don't know a lot about it, D&D miniatures was its own game. I mean, yeah, you could use the miniatures for your ongoing D&D game, but this was a dedicated miniatures combat game. It was a lot more like CCGs in where you would buy booster packs and they were blind draws and things like that. Combat was basically just a distilled version of the D&D combat at the time. And for me, it was nice. I tend to shy away from collectible games. You know, I did Magic for so long, it's like, I don't want to do collectible. But the fact I could just add them to my collection and I used them for my D&D game, it made it... I got double usage out of them, so
right.
We played that quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah, and it still had a player mat, like a mat. It wasn't like three dimensional terrain like HeroScape,
no.
But you'd have little squares that you moved in,
right.
No tape measure,
yep.
And everything was pre-painted, and they were really nice, you know, plastic miniatures that came with. But again, I never saw myself as wanting to get any deeper because the rules for D&D miniatures, a little more complicated than HeroScape, and some of the abilities really kind of lined up with D&D.
Yeah, a little more fiddly than HeroScape too.
Yeah, yeah. That game has since been discontinued as a standalone game.
Right. Yep.
With the advent of 4th edition.
Yeah, they still make the miniatures, but they don't. It's not part of own separate game.
Right. And there's also a game called Star Wars Miniatures, which I'm not sure. I was going to say that still has some support, but
yeah. But I think with not renewing the Star Wars license, they're going to lose it.
That's going to fall away.
But it actually, at least around here, it was much more popular than D&D miniatures, and it actually still gets a lot of play.
Yeah. And so it was an opportunity to be able to, you know, play a miniatures game that was a little bit more complex without having to deal with the whole painting aspect of it.
Right.
The downside was the collectible part of it. Now, a game I never really got into that much was Hero Clicks and all the Clicks games like Mage Knight and Horror Clicks. But I think those are another set of games that a lot of people got into as far as miniatures games go. You know, so... It kind of starts with HeroScape. It goes to like this collectible thing, and then we get to miniatures wargaming.
Mm-hmm.
And the granddaddy of miniatures wargaming is by far Warhammer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two versions of that: Warhammer Fantasy Battles and Warhammer 40,000 or 40K. And you know that is, like Cody says, the section of the game store that you go into, and it's like these all these gray boxes and red boxes that just, you know, you shake them and they feel like you know models of. You know, like we put together like car models, like the 57 Chevy, you know?
Yeah.
And so I would go into that section of the store and just...
It's so intimidating, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You just see just packs just lining the wall and you wouldn't even know where to begin. And it's so expensive and you just kind of stay away from it.
Yeah. I mean, the rule book's like $50 for 40K. And these boxes, I would pick them up and, you know, a HeroScape booster that would give you six miniatures would be, you know, $12 maybe. Yeah. And then a Warhammer 40K pack, which would have a set of five or six Space Marines, or more than that, maybe like eight Space Marines, would be like $40.
Yeah.
And I couldn't figure out why, you know, why would someone want to do that? So, you know, just again, avoided that completely. And you, Cody and I have been friends for a few years here, but prior to this, you never had any thought of these kind of games, did you?
No, because to me, just what I had seen of it and kind of just what I had heard was that it was a really expensive thing. You had to put down a lot of money up front, and whether this is true or not, I still don't really know of Warhammer, so I don't want to just, you know, make blind
right.
conjecture. But from what I had heard, you know, you had to put all this money down to even field a basic army that you could play with, and it was just really cutthroat, and it was almost kind of an elitist thing. You know, it's kind of like when you saw them playing at the game store, you just kind of, you didn't watch, you just went on to the board games. And
right, because the barrier to entry just seemed too great
yeah.
To be able to put together an army that was going to be decent enough. At least with Magic the Gathering, you know, you could drop some money and put together a deck that would be
serviceable
in a friendly environment. Yeah. But just to get up to speed where you'd have a big enough army to be able to play 40K would cost a whole lot of money. Yeah. So stayed away from that. Now, a few years ago at Gen Con, I came across a miniatures game that was very much in the style and complexity of a game like Warhammer, but had pre-painted miniatures, and that's the game AT-43. Mm-hmm. And I fell in love with this game, and so I bought quite a bit of of miniatures for that game, and I kind of loaded up on that stuff, and I had a whole bunch. My thought was I would get enough to have two forces, you know, two factions worth of stuff, so that Cody and I could play, or you know, another second player could play. And I think what I found was that, well, the game was really a lot of fun, but as far as getting it to the table, you know, Cody liked it. You liked it okay.
I liked
right?
it okay. Liked I think okay. I actually would like it more now.
Oh yeah, no, yeah.
But at the time, I was. Yeah.
And I think, you know, I tried to get into sort of a group at a local game store that was starting to play the game and played a couple of times, but it just kind of fell away. And I ended up taking my AT-43 stuff and trading it to some guy on BoardGameGeek for like 6 board games or something like that. So, you know, I got what I thought was a pretty good deal. I probably got screwed badly, but I got what was, you know, what I really wanted. So, anyway, so that sort of brings us up close to present day here. So we're, you know, where I'm hearing this on the D6 generation, I'm like, these games sound pretty cool. They're talking about this modeling stuff and this painting. And, you know, I think I'm going to give this a shot, but I don't want to invest a whole lot of money. Now, the good thing that I'd heard about War Machine is that you didn't have to invest hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars to be able to field a decent army. That just the starter set is enough to play a decent game. And so, but the thing that was bothering me was not the gameplay. You know, I'm fine with that. It was the assembly and the painting. So I purchased one Warjack.
Yep.
It was on sale. It was like on clearance for $15, a Vanquisher Warjack for the Protectorate of Menoth. And I just kind of read up on what's involved in putting these things together. I actually bought the Core Elements or Core Techniques DVD from Privateer Press that they put out that show you how to assemble these things and how to paint them. Hmm. And I just said, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to paint this one guy. And if I think it sucks and I'm terrible at it or I don't have the patience for it, then I can, you know, put it away. But if I like it, then I might continue with it. And so I got all my stuff together. You know, I probably sunk about $50 worth of supplies into everything.
Yeah.
But I found that as I started putting these things together, that it wasn't that hard, and it didn't take long for them to look pretty cool. You know, just getting the Warjack assembled took a good, you know, half a day or whatever because I was slow.
Mm-hmm.
But once that thing was on its stand, I mean, it looks really impressive.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big metal thing on the table there. And then the painting part of it was just a real slow process where I probably took a week or more to paint my first Warjack and just going through the techniques that they had on that DVD. And when it got done, I thought it looked pretty good.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah. And so, you know, it was at that point that I kind of showed this to Cody and said, check it out. And what would, you know, so then I decided I wanted to get some... like an actual battle group box, you know, a starter set. And so I got that for my my birthday and just began to start painting those up.
Yeah. What got me kind of on board with, you know, seeing the painted mini was neat. But the fact that War Machine seemed like more of my kind of game. I preferred the small kind of squad-based combats versus just the legions of armies that you would see in Warhammer and 40K. And the fact that they have these battle group boxes, you know, which I think they retail for like $50, you know, you pick your faction and that's everything you need. It's a good starting point because you get a Warcaster, a couple Warjacks. And the really nice thing is you can play battle box versus battle box and it's really balanced.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, well, you know, if he's willing to make the investment in it, yeah, sure. You know, I've bought dumber things before. I'll take a swing. I like painting okay. It's not my most favorite thing, but it's fun. It's okay.
Yeah. So, your wife's kind of a pretty big painter.
Yeah, yeah. She's a better painter than I am. So I figure it's something we could do together. Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
So
I got my stuff together, and I actually, my buddy David at work, I was able to get him sort of into it too, and to purchase a battle group. And we just got together and just started playing. We played our first couple of games, and found that having the painted miniatures on the table, it just looks really cool to have those, those things painted. And you sort of start to see after a while the value of the pricing of things, mm-hmm. that Warjack costs $15 on sale. It's probably $25 or $30 retail. And, so you think that $25-$30, you get, two or three boosters for HeroScape for that, right?
Yep.
But there's so much more value to it because you have to assemble it. You take all that time to paint it. I mean, it's really like a little miniature work of art that you've created, and you've invested so much time in it that the return on investment is really great. Yeah. And I think that's the key to remember with these kind of games, is that I spent that $15, or let's say I'd spent $25 or $30 retail, but I got hours of enjoyment of assembling and painting it. Plus at the end of that, I get to play it in the game, which is fun. So the return on investment is different than I thought it would be.
Yeah, the price of minis games I'd always really balked at, because it's like, well, just to stay competitive, I gotta sink all this money. And I found with War Machine, I've kind of targeted the army size that I want to get to. From what I've seen, 35 point is a good standard size. Yeah. With that, you can most likely find a game. And I kind of priced everything out. And, it's maybe, not counting supplies, just counting models, maybe $100, $150 total, yeah, past the battle group box. But the great thing is you don't have to spend all of that at once. It's right. Like, I have just my battle group box, and I've played many games.
Yeah.
And I can just kind of slowly add forces to my army, so long as my opponent's doing the same. I don't have to chunk down that $150 right away. I could do it over a year's time.
Right.
And, that's not going to break the bank.
Yep. And so I think, and we'll sort of transition here into kind of our look at specifically at War Machine, but I think, one of the things that you need to remember with these kind of games is that you do have to enjoy the painting part of it somewhat,
Yeah,
if you have absolutely no interest in painting or assembling things, then it might be something to avoid. Although I would say that was me. And, I just went ahead and just, like Cody said, dipped the toe in the water there and tried the one Warjack and just gave it a shot, So if you're someone who says, I don't do painting, I don't do assembly, I don't do that hobby stuff, if you're open to open yourself up and have a little extra disposable income to try something new, maybe just buy yourself one figure, and I would recommend buying a Warjack or something large, mm-hmm. and then work your way down to small, because the really, really tiny ones, like the Warcaster size and some of these really small ones and Warhammer and that kind of stuff, I mean, they're harder to paint,
yeah,
because it's just much, much smaller. So if you start with something big, then you can get a good result and, feel good about what you've worked on there. The other thing is you really do need to be able to find an opponent.
Yeah.
So, check with your local game store to see if they're playing this game and, what kind of leagues or tournaments they have going on. Because you could build it the way I tried to build AT-43, which is I'll buy two factions worth of stuff and then try to get someone to come and play. But as we're about to talk about, the rule set for this game is very involved.
Yeah.
It's not a simple game like HeroScape that you can just sit down with a non-gamer or someone who doesn't know these games and say, want to play War Machine? It'll be the worst learning game you've ever had in your entire life.
Yeah. And I think you have to have... You have to get other players that have a sense of ownership in it. That may have been some of the thing with AT-43 is, I didn't have the book. I didn't have any kind of ownership in it. Although going back, I'd probably give it another whirl. But I think it's really fun if you can find someone who would be interested. Like with John and I, we didn't know anything. And we more or less kind of went into it together.
Yeah.
And, we learned the rules together, and none of it, it wasn't someone who really knew the game teaching someone who had no idea and just thrashing them over and over.
Right.
We were kind of stumbling through it together and learning things. So,
yeah,
that's a big thing.
And I think ownership is a good point that you make there, because I think that is where a lot of the fun of the game comes, is you bring your army. This is my army. I've painted it the way I wanted it painted. This is my stuff. I've put it together the way I want it done. And I'm here to play,
Yeah.
And that, if you get other people that are bought in like that, then that's part of the fun, is that you really feel as I'm moving my Crusader Warjack around, that I've painted up, that I feel a sense of accomplishment when I use that Warjack to destroy something,
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that sounds geeky and stupid, but that really is the way it is. Yeah. And so, let's talk now about the game of War Machine itself.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Okay, so let's start off by talking about, I guess, the things that you need to be able to play the game.
Yep.
Okay. So you're going to need a rule book. Mm-hmm. And the new rule book that just came out at the beginning of this year is called War Machine Prime Mark II. And it's a very beautiful, full-color rule book that comes in a soft cover and a hardcover version, so whichever you'd like to get. And it has all of the rules, and it also has beautiful artwork in it and some sort of fluff and flavor about this world. Cody, why don't you describe kind of what the War Machine world is?
Yeah, it's also been made into a D20 campaign setting called Iron Kingdoms, which is kind of like a steampunk meets D&D sort of world. So you have, for example, one of the factions has units called Gun Mages, where they use kind of like flintlock pistols, but they can imbue the bullets with magic. So it's kind of that sort of thing. You know, there's a lot of kind of steam powered mechanical things. You know, turn of the century almost kind of tech level.
It's like if you had a Victorian society where they had technology that was similar to 21st century technology plus magic, you know, what would that look like? Mm-hmm. You know, it has a sort of, you know, steampunky feel to it. So, and there's four factions. Well, actually, as there's five now. Well, there's six if you count the mercenaries, mm-hmm. but there's five factions. The Krix, which are kind of the undead.
They're undead. Their main thrust seems to be lots of low cost, small units meant to kind of just overwhelm you, mm-hmm. you know, strength in numbers sort of thing.
And I think things where you can get bonuses for killing them off or things like that. Mm-hmm. There is Kador,
the good guys, as I like to call them. That's my faction. They're the Russians, basically. They're big. Their default paint scheme is just this all red and black and gold. The idea is, they are very slow, but they're very tough. You know, they're kind of like the lumbering giants. It takes a while for them to get in there, but they pack a punch, and they're kind of hard to hurt. They may not be as versatile and have a lot of tricks, but they're just kind of straight ahead, and that's what I like.
Yep. Then there's the Signar, which are sort of the technological flagship of the Iron Kingdom's world. And so they have a lot of ranged weaponry and a lot of electrical stuff that's involved in theirs. And then there is the best faction.
The bad guys.
The Protectorate of Menoth, which is sort of the religious fanatics.
And my friend Morgan calls them Robo-Vatican 3000.
The Robo-Vatican. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So it's all these, they have units called like the Holy Zealots, the Choir of Menoth. That's, you know, they sing hymns that give bonuses to the warjacks and things like that. So a lot of fun there. There's also another faction called the Retribution of Syra, which I don't know really much about at all because it's not part of the Mark II book. It's a new faction that came out just before they released the Mark II rules. So, you know, check online for information about that.
From what I've seen, they're more pure magic based.
They're like elves, aren't they? I thought they were like even some kind of...
You don't want to play them.
And then they look like they're hard to paint too, actually. Yeah. It's kind of this white color scheme. And then there is the Mercenaries, which they have their own like battle group box and things like that. But there are also certain units and warjacks that you can add to your own faction depending on what mercenary contract they're a part of.
I'm actually thinking of adding one to my group.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Okay. So that's all the different kind of factions, and they're just all at war with each other for various reasons. There's lots of great fluff and flavor text inside of the book that you can read about that. So you're going to need that rule book. You're going to need some miniatures.
Yes.
And we would recommend to start off with a battle group box. Each of the factions has their own battle group box, which will consist of one warcaster. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about what that is in a second. And then two to three or four different warjacks, which are these giant steam-powered robots, basically, with a magical brain in them. Mm-hmm. And so that'll give you a good start as far as putting things together and painting them. And then you're also going to need some dice. You'll just need some D6s, probably.
5 to 6 should be plenty.
5 to 6 should be fine. And then you're probably going to need some kind of a marker to mark off what's called focus. Focus is sort of the magical points that the warcaster supplies to his warjacks to allow them to be able to do stuff.
It's where a lot of the strategy is in the game, I found. It's one of those things I kind of overlooked the first time. I'm like, and now I've played it a lot. It's like, oh, this is really important. You know, how you spend and allocate that is a big deal.
Yep. And so you can use little glass beads, or you can even use like D6, other kinds of D6s, and you know, to indicate that. Just set them next to the figures. You're going to need a tape measure of some kind, or some kind of measuring device, or ruler, or, you know, something that's flexible is probably the best idea.
Yeah.
And then You may need some kind of a circular measuring tool to measure area of effect, like you have a bomb or something or a grenade that you're throwing.
They do have templates in the rule book that you could cut out or copy.
That's true. Yeah, they have those. And then there are some third-party companies, like Gale Force 9 used to make some specific Privateer Press war machine templates. I have some of those. They also would make some tokens that are specific for different effects. So you might be able to find those online and pick up something like that. Beyond that, you might need some terrain. We actually use HeroScape terrain because we haven't had a chance to make our own cool terrain.
We should use some AT-43 terrain.
Good point. I'll have to pull that out of my starter box. There's also, if you play at a local game store, you know, you might be able to use their terrain. You know, and that's, of course, where this game is played a lot, is at local game stores if you aren't able to find an opponent at home. So I think, is that all you need?
I think so. I mean, not counting paint and tools to
assemble it. Yep, that's right. You'll need, and then as far, we won't get into the details of hobby modeling stuff this episode, but, you know, you'll need just some basic tools, a hobby knife and some clippers. Yeah. And
you can usually find those in a set, and then Privateer Press, actually, which goes well with the Battle Group box, they have faction-specific paint sets.
Yeah.
You know, that gives, you know, everything you need to paint Kador, everything you need to paint Stupid Minoth, you know, whatever you might do.
But you are under no obligation, of course, to paint them those particular, what they call gallery colors.
Oh, no.
You can paint them, you know, if you want to make your Protector of Menoth, which they're normally like a kind of a white and red, you could paint them pink and if you want to.
Yeah, that was kind of cool because I played around with that and I got a scheme that I really liked.
Yeah, you have kind of a cool gray.
I did like a even mix between red and gray instead of just solid red because that was a bit much for me. I think it's cool looking.
Again, part of that ownership thing. Yeah. So once you've, assembled and painted all your miniatures there, at least assembled them, you know, they look better on the table if they're painted, but as long as you have them at least assembled, you're good to go to play. And so then you have your game. And so what's basically going to happen is you'll start off the game with a deployment phase, and you'll start off by putting terrain or, you know, around in whatever fashion you guys are able to agree upon. And then each person rolls a D6, and the person who wins gets to decide who deploys first. You're going to set up your miniatures no greater than 10 inches away from the end of the table. And you can just set them out in whatever configuration that you want. Again, we're going to be talking specifically about a battle group box battle here. There are units of troops that'll be like little guys that, you know, five or six of them. They have specific rules as to how they can be formed together and in formation and things like that. But you'll set all your miniatures out, and then it'll be the first player's turn. And the turn has a few steps to it. The first one is called the maintenance phase, which is going to be basically where the warcaster gets all of his focus points back. So the warcaster is kind of the leader of the army. He's sort of he's the leader of the army, right?
Yeah, it should be said this is maybe different from some other miniatures game, is where the objective of the game is not to completely obliterate the opponent's force, though recommended. All you have to do is kill their warcaster, basically their general, and you win.
Yeah, in most cases. I mean, because with warjacks, the warjacks aren't able to really do much without the warcaster's control. If you had an army that was a whole bunch of troops, the troops could technically win on their own.
Yeah, that's true.
But you're right that a lot of the games are set up for, you know, what they call assassination runs, where you're trying to target that warcaster and kill them. So yep.
I just recently played a game where I was getting beat on every level of the game, and I was just able to make a mad dash with my warcaster himself to go after my opponent's warcaster, and I won because of that, where I had pretty much lost 90% of the game.
Yeah, and so that's a pretty cool part of it, to be targeted like that. So the warcaster has very powerful magic, but usually isn't definitely not the most powerful, you know, armor and that kind of stuff. So they might kind of hang back and just cast these spells. And so the warcaster is going to get a certain number of focus points at the beginning of the game. The nice thing is that all of this stuff that we're going to talk about with stats, focus points, you know, melee attack, that kind of stuff, each unit has their own card. And that was something we forgot to mention, actually, is that what other thing you'll need to get is a deck of cards for your particular faction.
And public service announcement, make sure you get it'll be called the 2010 faction deck.
Yes, not just Mark II. It needs to say Mark II 2010.
Privateer Press kind of took a step back, and they released kind of the old set of rules that they called part of it Mark II.
Yeah.
And if you get a set of those cards, it might be out of date. So as long as your box says 2010 faction deck on it, you'll be good to go.
Yep.
Just double check that.
And so that faction deck has a card for every kind, every unit, and every warjack that is currently available. Mm-hmm. Now, new things that will come out, those will actually come with a card, will come with the miniature.
Right.
So that this way, this is a good way for you to build your army too. That you can like look at all the abilities and things that the different units do, and you can sort of put that together before you actually buy the figures. Another thing that's good about this is specifically for warcasters, because they do different things, you can do what's called proxying, where you could use your warcaster miniature that you have, but you could actually use the card for a completely different warcaster, and as long as your opponent's cool with it, you can proxy and use that warcaster's abilities.
Yeah. And it's nice for planning your army out ahead of time. You know, this weekend I finally sat down and built my ideal 35-point army that I want to field. So it's nice because I basically just made a shopping list.
Yeah.
You know, I was able to see all the stats. I didn't have to buy it, you know, try it out, and then like, oh, this isn't for me. I just blew $15, you know.
Right. So that's a good a positive thing too. So you're going to have a card for each one of your units there. You want to have these in sleeves because you're going to be marking off damage on the card itself, and so you want to have like a dry erase marker to maybe mark on the sleeve where your damage points are. So each player is going to set up each of their sets of miniatures, and you'll do that first focus allocation step. So you're going to get all your focus, and there's a particular number for each warcaster, and then you will allocate that focus. And it's kind of a planning step. You're going to decide in your head what you want to do with each of your figures on your turn. Then you're going to give the warjacks a certain amount of focus so that they can do those things. A warjack on its own is, you know, can move and can attack, but giving it focus will allow it to do things like charge and run and do power attacks like slamming into something or picking up a warjack and throwing it across the table, that kind of a thing. So you need focus to be able to do those things. In addition, the warcaster himself is going to have magic spells that they can cast, which might be defensive spells or they might actually be offensive spells, and they'll need focus to be able to do that. So you're going to work that all out in your head and allocate your focus accordingly. And then you have your activation phase where you're going to move in turn each one of your warjacks or units around and then attack with them. And so you have movement and then you have combat actions. So each unit has a speed value of some kind and they can move that number of inches. They can move around terrain and things like that. It's going to bend the tape measure around.
Yeah, it's very real time, you know. If you're used to playing with hexes or squares, you know, this is, you know, if there's a box in your way, there's a box in your way.
Right.
You're going to have to navigate that somehow.
Yep.
But one other thing that I guess miniatures games I thought, you know, would scare me is just really complex rules. War Machine is, it's got deep rules. I wouldn't say they're complex.
No.
That's what's nice about it is it all kind of has a system. You know, it's usually 2d6 plus something,
right?
And it's really easy to latch onto, and things just make sense,
right?
You know, it feels like now that I've played a lot, I feel like I've really got it under my fingers and I can play it. So
yeah,
just a nice point there.
Yep, and that's good. It's good to be able to have the majority of the rules just in your head, and if you need to look up an odd thing, have a, you know, reference sheet or some kind of a just look in the rule book real quick.
Because we're about 90% book free, and we've only played 4 or 5 times, maybe.
Yeah. And so it seems real intuitive. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes a lot of sense. There's not a lot of wonkiness in the rules. You know, so each of your figures is going to move around. Like I said, if you have a speed value in inches, if you run, then you have to, for your warjacks, you have to spend a focus to do that. You get to move double your movement in that case, but you wouldn't get to attack. If, you know, you have melee weapons and ranged weapons, and, you know, the range is going to be on the card there in number of inches. One very interesting thing about measurement in this game is that if you have a guy with a gun and you want to shoot another miniature, you have to declare that attack before you measure the range. So you can't say, I'm going to measure the range and, oh yeah, I'm close enough to hit him, so now I'm going to attack him. You have to say ahead of time, I'm going to try to shoot that guy. And then you measure your range to see mm-hmm. if you made it or not. So, you know, you can actually just miss because you came up short or something. Yeah.
That seems more, I hate to say realistic, but, you know, it's like, oh, you think you can hit with your gun, you shoot, and you don't.
You don't quite make it. Yeah. And so the only thing that you can measure at any point is, and this is, you can sort of use this as a half cheat in
wink,
the game,
wink. Wink, wink,
is you can always measure the control radius of your warcaster. And that is a value that's 2 times the number of focus points they get. my Warcaster, High Exemplar Krios.
Boo.
Good guys. He has 7 focus points, so his control radius is 14 inches. So at any point in the game, I can always measure that 14 inches from him and just, you know, sweep the tape measure around to see, you know, because there's some effects that that the Warcaster has that affect, or it's only miniatures that are within his control radius. So you can always do that. And so if you're careful, you know, you can measure that and sort of get a gauge on some other distances on the table. After you've moved, then you're going to attack. And the basic mechanic for attacking in the game is pretty easy. If you're in a melee combat, which means you're base to base, your miniature is going to smash with a club or hit them with the open hand or something, then you're going to roll 2d6 plus what's called a melee attack value. And you'll roll that number, and then you're going to compare that number to the opponent's defense value. And if you tie it or beat it, then you actually do hit. But hitting is only the first part of it. Then you actually have to see if you do damage. Really big things usually have very low defense value. So something like a Juggernaut Warjack, which is a big Kador Warjack, has a defense of like 10.
Yeah.
So, you know, 2d6 plus your melee attack, which is usually about a 5 or 6. You know, sometimes you have to only roll like a 4 or 5 on the dice to even hit the guy.
Yeah, my boys are easy to hit.
Yeah, but you know, then there's big armor on them, so
armor 20
more difficult to actually damage. So then after you hit, then you're going to roll a damage roll. The damage roll is 2d6 plus, if it's a melee weapon, each weapon has what's called a power or a pow, and for a melee weapon you're going to roll what's called P plus S, which is the power of the weapon plus the strength of your character. So it's 2d6 plus P plus S. And, you know, P plus S is actually already calculated on your card. So it's
a really good
number.
Idea.
Yeah. So you do the 2d6 plus P plus S, and then you're going to compare that to the armor value of the thing that you're hitting. If you, for every point that's over the armor value, then you're going to deal a damage. Now, each of the Warjacks has a whole bunch of armor and has a whole bunch of systems in it. And this is illustrated by a grid that's on the card and of little boxes, almost like you're doing like an aerial shot of the overhead shot of the Warjack. And so then after you deal damage, you're going to roll a die to see which column that damage happened. There's 6 columns of boxes, and then you'll start at the top of whatever column it is and just tick off that particular number of damage points. Within those boxes, there's some letters like L, R, M, C, and A. Okay, so L and R are left and right arm. If you ever have damaged all the boxes in the L section, then that means the left arm is crippled, and so then it can it's limited and it can roll one less die, and it's not able to do the things it's able to do. Same thing with M, that's movement. If you then the Warjack's not able to run or charge. And then things like C is the cortex, which is like the magical brain of the Warjack. If you completely destroy that, then the Warjack can't be allocated focus and can't do any of those extra things with focus. So that's kind of how the damage system works there. If you have a ranged weapon, then it's very similar. It's 2d6 plus your ranged attack, or RAT, versus the defense of your target. And then your damage is going to be 2d6 plus just the pow of your weapon. It doesn't really matter how strong your character is. It's just the weapon itself, again, versus the armor. That's the basics of real basics of attacking.
Yeah, you know, everything bases off that. There's a lot, you know, there's powers you can do with focus. There's spells. There's a lot of things that will increase that, but that is the core system and very easy, very streamlined.
And probably one of the coolest things and the coolest option that you have in this game is you can use focus to do what's called boosting. And that will allow you to add a d6 to any of your rolls, either a roll to hit or a roll for damage. You just spend that focus to be able to do that. So, you know, being able to boost your damage and roll 3d6 plus your P plus S or your POW could really inflict a whole lot more damage. So this sort of resource allocation part of the game, you Euro gamers out there would like this, you know, that it's a lot of strategy and planning of how you're going to do your resources with that focus, and then how that ends up getting played out during your activation phase. So you just kind of go back and forth and do this. We could get into the nitpicky details about, you know, line of sight and all that kind of stuff. All miniatures war games are going to have that kind of stuff in them. you know, line of sight and whether something's knocked
concealment,
down.
Concealment, cover.
There's also even power attacks where you can do special attacks with focus where you can, like I said, headbutt. You can put a guy into a headlock. You know, you can throw things. And there's special rules that govern that too. So, but that is the basics of the game. And it's really not that difficult to pick up.
No, you know? Not at all.
Just a couple of games of learning and looking through the rules. Or even better, if you're able to go to a game store and have someone who knows the rules cold that can help to teach you, it's pretty easy.
Definitely.
So that is the basics of War Machine. So, I mean, I guess just going through, as we would call our buy, try, and deny points, mm-hmm. what would be your buy points for War Machine?
The fact that it's so intuitive, that was a big thing, because I was really concerned it would just be a bunch of nitpicky rules and a slog, and it really wasn't. I mean, even the things like line of sight and cover and concealment, the things you think would be the most fiddly really aren't that bad. And after, you know, we said we've played four or five times and we've almost got it down to where, you know, we don't even need the book. We can just go. And that's nice. And so it, to me, it's no more complex than a big box board game. You know, after a few plays, you're really going to start to get it. And another thing that I don't think we mentioned was it really favors you getting into the action.
Right.
It the way the game is built, it does not favor you kind of turtling and doing little nitpicky shots. You know, it really go in and get
just
metal
smash,
on metal. Yeah.
Smash into the other person. Yeah.
And that's not to say tactics are completely disregarded. Far from it. But it kind of eliminates that guy.
Right.
You're like, well, I'm going to stay in my bunker and, you know, I'm going to shoot and I'm going to move where, you know.
Well, everybody else is going, come on.
Yeah. You know? It's like, it's a war game. Fine. Yeah. And it's just a heck of a lot of fun. You know. It's like the customization, you're just going out there, you're putting your dudes out there, and that is a heck of a lot of fun, and that's why I have bought into it, and I'm going to continue to buy into it.
Yep. My buy points are really similar. The intuitive nature of the rules, you know, where it's the stuff just makes sense of what you're doing. You know, just what I explained earlier about how if something's big, it has a low defense, but it has a really big armor. Well, that totally makes sense, you know, that it'd be easy to hit something that's big and clunky, but it would be difficult to damage it. So there's so much variety in the game. I think that that's just makes it so rich. That makes it, you know, kind of a something that latches onto you, because you say, much like Magic the Gathering or any of these kind of games, you say, well, wow, if I could get this guy, you know, combined with this guy, you know, these combinations that you can put together. You know, one thing I just forgot to mention, I'll just bring in real quick, is that each one of the Warcasters has one big-time special ability called a feat, mm-hmm. which is like almost a game changer, you know, and they can do that feat, or what they call popping the feat, once per game. And so, you know, beginning to see what all those different feats do, it's there's so much you can put together in your head as your strategy for your game, and I think that's pretty good. I also think that of all the miniatures games that I've seen, I love the sculpts on the War Machine miniatures the best. I think that they're just great looking miniatures.
Good point.
Yep. So what about try points?
I will say cost as a try point, and not to scare anyone away, because I think once you've kind of bought into it, it's not so bad. But I think that initial buy-in, like if you're starting completely fresh, you know, buying tools, paints, and the battle box, you know, you're probably going to hit the $100 mark, you know, thereabouts.
Oh, yeah.
That's just going out there. But with that, you have a fieldable army, whereas I don't think you could do that with some of the other minis game, at least just from what I've seen.
Sure.
And then really from that, you just go at the speed of the people you play with. You know, like with John and I, we just have done battle box. He's bought a few units I haven't, so I'm kind of slowing him down, sorry.
No, that's all right.
but yeah, you know, you're not... Nothing is really forcing you to buy. You know, it's not collectible. It's you pick kind of the style you want, and the rule book has many examples from everything from a battle box army to this grand melee, like 100, 200 point type of thing. So you can kind of go at your own pace, but there is that buy-in, which is probably going to be around $100 US, just ballpark in there. So just a word of warning.
Yep, I would agree with that as well. I think, and I think also being able to find opponents is an important thing, and I think that's a try point too. It could be a deny point depending on where you live, because if you're not able to find, like I said, if you're not able to find any opponents, then you want to proceed with extreme caution, unless you just want to try out painting, and you might just find that I painted this cool guy and I'm going to put him on a little shelf, and that can be really rewarding just to do that hobbying part of it, but. Yeah. So, oh, and just would also just back up and mention, you mentioned the point values. You know, each one of these units has a particular number of points. And so when you build your army, you'll start off by saying, we're going to play a 25 point game. And then you'll build your army accordingly based upon that. So it doesn't take too long, really, to be able to get enough units and warjacks where you can swap things out and still have a really good 25 or 35 point army, which is the kind of standard size for a game. Deny points?
The only one I would have would be if you don't enjoy or at least tolerate the painting and the modeling, I just don't think it would be a good investment because then it just becomes an obligation and a slog, and I don't think you're having fun with it. Even once you have it assembled and you're ready, it's like, oh, geez, I got to paint all these guys. And if that's just really not your thing, and even after you try it, it's really not your thing, I wouldn't make the investment because I just don't think you're going to get enough return on investment fun-wise out of it. But I encourage you, even if you think you don't like it, give it a shot. You know, just try something out, and you may find you like it more than you think you would.
I would you and I are so in sync. I would completely agree. It's the modeling part, I think, is the only thing that would be a deny point. If that's something that doesn't interest you, you know, that's a big red flag. I wouldn't even go there.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, you know, does that kind of wrap up our feelings about
Warhammer?
So. What are your final thoughts?
This game surprised me. Mm-hmm. This is one I thought you got the battle box. I really thought it was, I'm going to get the battle box. I'll paint it. We'll play 6 months. We'll not even talk about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't think it is. It's one of those games where I've been really cautious. I'm like, I don't want to just kind of blindly start buying into this. I want to make sure I really like it. And I'm having a lot of fun with it. And it's so much quicker than I thought that I'm going to start, you know, kind of building my army up. And this is something, you know, I plan to play more just among friends. You know, I'm not going to do tournaments or anything. I may play at a game store now and then, but I'm just going to play with you and my friends. And this game just surprised me, and I'm really glad I kind of took that leap. So I really like it, and I think it's a lot of fun.
Yep, I feel exactly the same way. Of course, I got into it before Cody and sort mm-hmm. of pulled him into the abyss. But I really have been surprised, and I think it's a good addition to my gaming hobby. I don't think it's going to completely take over my hobby. I know that for some people that are into like 40K and that kind of thing, that's what they do. That is their gaming.
Yeah.
But this is a good addition where someday we could play a board game, and if Cody comes over and, hey, you want to play War Machine? Bring your minis, we'll play War Machine. The game doesn't take that long to play, really. Yeah. You know, you can play through a full battle in, you know, a couple hours.
We've done duels with our battle box group that were under an hour.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just real quick.
Yep. And so that's another good point going for it. So I think you know, as gamers, you know, we encourage new horizons, and, you know, we encourage you to, you know, give something like this a try. If you feel like you're going to have opponents and you're going to enjoy that modeling to any degree, we would encourage you to check this game out. To that end, if you've been listening to this and you're thinking, you know, maybe I could just give this a try.
Maybe I want
to dip the toe in the water there, you know. Then we want to encourage you, and we actually have a little contest here we want to do. And we want to thank, first of all, listener Irvin Kippen.
Big thank you.
Oh, my goodness. Irvin wrote us an email and said that he used to own an online game store and that he had some War Machine figures just kind of sitting around and wanted to donate to our show, but he wanted to donate product rather than money. And so we said, oh, well, sure, whatever you're able to send us. He sent us a ton of stuff. Yep. Very, very generous. And we thank you so much for doing that. And he sent us some stuff for Menoth for my army, some stuff for Kador for Cody's. And then he sent us some others, another one that we wanted to give away as a contest prize.
Mm-hmm.
So we have from the Signar faction, an ironclad heavy warjack.
Yep. It's a great sculpt.
Yep. And this is actually one of the heavy warjacks that's included in the battle group box. But if you're hesitant about wanting to jump into the battle group box and want to just get started, this would be a great one to try.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if you were to go to Privateer Press's website and check out their Core Techniques DVD, they actually give specific instructions on how to paint an ironclad. And so we're going to give away this ironclad warjack. And Cody, why don't you tell them how they're going to win this one?
All right, so we're going to go back and we're going to use the Game On voicemail because it's just so cool.
It's awesome.
And we want you to, if you're interested in getting this ironclad, to first call in and tell us kind of your preconceived notions of minis games, you know, if you've done them in the past, if you haven't, and then kind of why you want to try it out, you know, what part of it makes you want to play, or just something involved in that line. We really want to hear from you and, you know, get your opinion because we think this whole, you know, kind of board slash RPG gamers going over to the miniatures game side, you know, not to completely overtake, but, you know, right, as just another facet of the gaming hobby. We think that's actually a large group of people.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in getting this piece to start your army, then, or not even to start your army, just to try it out.
We would invite, if there are War Machine players out there, I mean, we're not limiting to this just to new folks. And we'd like to really encourage some new gamers in this hobby. But you know, if you've got War Machine players that you want to add an Ironclad to your army, that's perfectly fine too. You know, call us or write us and tell us. Are we doing this via the voicemail box?
Yes,
only?
Via the voicemail.
Sorry. Call us and tell us you know, your experience with having gotten into War Machine and how long you've been playing. Just, you know, basically that'll be your entry in the contest. You don't need to say anything super special, and we will take all your names, throw them in a hat, and we'll give away this great Ironclad. So be sure to call the Game On voicemail box at
4138 Game On.
That's right. That's 413-842-6366. 4138 Game On. So call us, and our next episode we will select our winner of this Ironclad. And again, thanks to Irvin for being our prize sponsor for this contest.
Big thank you.
All righty. Well, so that is War Machine and our foray into miniatures gaming. Mm-hmm. You ready to close the show out?
Let's do it.
All righty. Well, that just about wraps up another great episode of Game On with Cody and John. We thank you so much for listening. And what are we going to be talking about next episode, Cody?
Well, we're going to be reviewing the game we kind of teased in the inbox, and that's Summoner Wars.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
That seems to be the new hotness around the geek, so we're going to be checking that out and giving you the skinny on it.
That's right. We'll have a whole lot of other great stuff to tell you about. I'm actually getting ready to go on vacation here for a week in beautiful Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Going to see all that wonderful government stuff. Maybe get President Obama to sign my copy of Campaign Manager 2008 or something.
No, Lord. Watch out for Senator O'Kane. He's a
Watch out for O'Kane and and McBama.
Oh, come into my office.
All right. So we'll see you in a couple of weeks. And until next time,
Game On.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games, on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 4138-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. Join our guild on boardgamegeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows at pulpgamer.com. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Game On Podcast. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Game On!